Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is Anthony Curtis, publisher of the Huntington Press and Las Vegas Advisor. There are some exciting new things happening on at the LVA and Las Vegas, which we'll be talking about soon. Mostly tonight's going to be a round table discussion, which is actually my favorite kind of show that we do. And we actually better make that a triangular table discussion, since there's three of us. We're all going to chime in on a number of gambling topics. Since Anthony's going to be a full-time participant in that discussion, let me say now, Anthony Curtis, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you. Good to be here.
All right. We received an email addressed to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. It went, "As a table game player primarily, I don't want to give my ID and social security number to a casino if at all possible. If I play a machine and hit a hand pay, my understanding is that I can claim to not have my ID on me or not know my social security number and elect to have the casino use the higher backup withholding rate, 28%. Rather than no withholding, if I had provided ID and social security number. First, is this correct? Second, if I use this method but provide my real name, can I claim the amount won as winnings and get credit on my taxes for the annual amount? And third, if I provide the casino with an alias, can I then claim the winnings and get credit for withholding on my taxes?" When we originally got this email, I was surprised. I hadn't heard of the 28% rule. But I get hundreds of W-2Gs a year and long ago accepted the fact that I had to give my name and social security number. And once that genie's out, you can't put it back in. But I understand that many table game players want to play unrated and don't want the casino to know their name. I happen to be sitting next to one here in the studio tonight. Now, yes, the IRS has a provision for 28% being withheld if the winner does not furnish a correct tax payer identification number. There could be Social Security. There's a couple other things that qualify. However, many casinos have their own procedures on how to handle players with no ID. At the South Point, for example, if you don't show your acceptable ID, you do not get paid. Period. If you get a jackpot and don't have ID, they'll take you to the cage and give you a receipt. And while you're at the cage, there's lots of cameras there, and your picture will be taken. If you return with suitable ID and you appear to be the same person who they photographed, you'll be paid. If you don't, after some period of time, the money's forfeited to the state. You cannot force the casino to take out the 28% and give you the rest. Possibly you can hire an attorney and fight them on this. I don't know. I suspect that just arguing about it will give you a lot more attention than you want, given that you want to be anonymous anyway. The next part is a calculated guess. I'm not a qualified tax advisor. The IRS looks at your Social Security number, not your name, on the W-2Gs. If you use a fake name and your real Social Security number, I believe you can treat it the same on your taxes as if you used your real name and Social Security number. I once heard Munchkin say that he used an alias along with his real Social Security number, and he got a letter from the IRS asking, "Is this you?" And he said yes, and then there was no problem. The IRS doesn't care why you use the alias so long as they get their money. Do I have the story essentially right, Munch?
Yeah, and that's basically right. I used an alias with my real Social Security number several times. I mean, this is really common in the movie business, right? And I have to say, prior to 9/11, this was really easy. In California, anybody could just go into DMV and say, I'm an actor, a writer, a dancer, whatever, and I want to use the name Joe Blow. And they would say, fine, here's a driver's license under the name Joe Blow. So, yeah, I would get contacted by the IRS. And when I filled my taxes out, I would put my real name and I would put AKA and my other name. But I would get these letters that said, we had someone under this name using your Social Security number. Is it you? And I would just call them up and say, yeah, it's me. And that AKA is on my tax form. Now, I also had a friend who works at a casino, and he said the same thing. No ID, no pay. They would not pay anybody without an ID. I one time had an experience up at a casino, an Indian casino in California, where I won a drawing. And I had an ID, but they would not pay me unless I provided an actual Social Security card. And I said, who carries their Social Security card with them, you know? But I ended up going to a Social Security office in Fresno and getting a duplicate card just to collect, you know, the drawing. But one more thing I have to say, and many people are going to find this really hard to believe, but I have a friend who has, on more than one occasion, mucked a royal flush on a carnival game just so he would not have to provide ID.
You can do that in video poker, too. You get the royal flush, the machine locks up, and you leave the casino.
Right.
And won't chase you.
He literally has just thrown $25,000 into the muck, because he feels his name and Social Security number are worth more than that.
I'm sure there are people at the table who say, you know, for $3,000, I'll sign for you. But
if the casino would let them, maybe he would. But, yeah.
Now, it's usually, there's a saying, usually phrased more colorfully than I can say on AM radio, and my producer's ears are perking up when I say that. But you really shouldn't poop in your own backyard. Now, that probably pertains here. If you really want to keep your ID a secret, don't play any slots where you could get a W2G, no matter.
Now, one thing I'm curious about, though, is if you actually gave them your real ID and said, I don't know my Social Security number, just withhold the 28%, I don't know what the casino would do in that case. And then you could later go back and claim it on your taxes if the casino would do it. And that way, at least your Social Security number is still clean.
Well, jump in any time here, Anthony. But
since I'm on the show, yeah, I'll say something. actually, everything you guys have said, I agree with. I mean, starting with you, Bob, it's if you don't want a taxable, don't play taxable situations. And that's what it boils down to. But it really also boils down to the casinos are relatively reasonable about this. They have reasons to want to get IDs and things. And you can, my understanding, I've used lots of aliases. I've used many aliases. And my understanding is that as long as you don't use an alias to defraud, with the intent to defraud, it's okay. And if you use your real Social Security number and explain to them, you know, if they ask, if it goes that far, yes, this is an alias, a legal alias that I use. This is my real Social Security number. They may ask for backup on that, in which case you might have to go to a bank and take out an alias,
a DBA.
A DBA. And I've done that. I've actually done that where I've had trouble getting paid. But if you do it, they're typically very, very reasonable. And I've never heard of anybody getting in trouble legally in any way for using an alias and not trying to defraud. I mean, if they're not trying to defraud.
Yeah. I mean, usually when people get in trouble, it's because they have a fake ID under the alias.
Well, so. I mean, if you've got you can have a fake ID. That's what I'm saying. You can actually have a fake ID if you have your proper Social Security number attached to it and you turn that over.
No, you can't make not a government ID. You can't make driver's license or a fake passport.
No, but you can give you can have, there are certain ones that you can get that they say they look very, very real, and they say they're for, you know, entertainment purposes only, and that's how you get them. And they pass them off as that. And if they say to you, well, you're trying to do this, I go, no, this is just something I use. I've done it. Where they say, this is not real. And I go, no, it's not. But it doesn't matter because I'm not trying to cheat you. I'm not trying to defraud you. All the information I'm giving you is accurate, including this alias that I use, which is a legal alias.
Yeah, I think things have gotten worse, in the last few years.
Since I played.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, since the Patriot Act and all that, things have gotten a lot worse, and they're really cracking down on.
Well, you would have to talk to an attorney to make sure, but I'm telling you, I've operated under that for a long time, and even though I'm not allowed to play table games anymore at all, I do things where I do get taxables, and I've used IDs without my real legal name on it many times, and had them call me on it, and not had a problem. Except they don't like it. They don't like it because they think you're doing something. So there's that secondary thing to worry about. But legally, the two important things, can you go to jail for it? No. Can you not get paid for it? Eventually, no. As long as you're not trying to pull the wool over them and defraud the government, that's really what they're really worried about.
Right. And the key about the Social Security number is if you can provide ID with your real name but not give the casino your social, you can change your name legally easily, but you can't change your Social Security number. So even though you've changed your name, if you come back and you have the same social, it's going to pop. And they're going to know. So if you've been barred and you change your name and go get a taxable and give them your real Social Security number.
Well, you get into different layers. I mean, I did this years and years ago when I first came to Vegas. I went to the IRS. At first, I went and had a DBA for a legal alias. I went to the IRS and said, this is what I do. I'm a writer and a gambler. And I need to use this alias. I gave it to the IRS. I said, I want my real social attached to my alias. They did it. They gave me a Social Security card in the new name.
Wow.
And something got screwed up because they now, all of my Social Security is actually under the alias. It really is. But I'm not worried about it because when the time comes, I just go and show them the paperwork. So if you do everything by the numbers, you can have an alias. It's tough when you have to have 5 and 6 and 7 aliases. Ooh. Then it gets tougher.
Just a guess, but would that alias happen to be Anthony Curtis?
Yes.
All right, good. Let's change subject here. And I have a corporation called Bob Dancer Products Incorporated. So it's if they need me to, because Bob Dancer is not the name on my driver's license. All right, losing streaks. Gus Hansen, widely known as an extremely competent poker player, is said to have lost $16 million lifetime, which means over the past 5 or 6 years, on Full Tilt Poker, including more than $1 million so far in the first 3 weeks of this year. He says he can still afford sandwiches. Without looking too closely at Gus in particular, losing streaks are part of the game, and we've all gone through them. So tonight, the three of us here are going to talk about what each of us do to deal with losing streaks. Richard, you go first. Have you ever had a losing streak?
Yeah. When I first started playing, I had a losing streak bad enough that I gave up blackjack. I was losing for 160 hours. I quit. Fortunately, a friend talked me into getting back into it. My attitude when I was losing meant I have to go put in more hours, and the most important thing was I learned you have to play with a bigger edge. You know, you play with a big enough edge, you don't lose for very long.
Right. Anthony, what do you do on a losing streak?
Similar. I just, you come back. You just power through it. I mean, I'm famously losing streaky when it comes to video poker. I mean, In the beginning, I went for an 11-year period without hitting a royal.
And 11 years?
11 years.
Playing how many hours a year?
I was playing a lot, but not anywhere near even what I play now. But I was playing quite a bit. It was the most insane streak you'd ever seen. I finally hit a royal playing they had brought out Family Feud game, and I was checking it out for an article. And I finally hit the royal on a nickel Family Feud that was short pay on the royal. It was unbelievable. It was something like $50 or something like that. And then I just kept playing, knowing that, you know, it would turn around, and it did. And, you know, I'm not saying I got even on my allotted number that I should have had. But recently, I just went, I went a year and a half playing heavy volume. I went a year and a half without hitting a royal. It's ridiculous. And then I hit 4 in 1 month. So, you know, you just keep playing. If you believe in it, if you don't believe in it, you stop. If it's wrecking you, you stop. If it's hurting your finances, you stop. But if you believe in it and you can cover the losses, you keep going.
No.
But the thing about Gus, though, is the problem with poker is you don't know if you're playing a winning game. You know, that is the big problem with poker. I mean,
well, who is Gus losing the money to?
Well,
yeah.
Somebody he was cutting it up with in the end. I mean, who knows? I'm not saying Gus was doing anything wrong, but I mean, there's lots of things going on in poker. I mean, if the statistics off of Full Tilt say he lost $16 million, that's fine. But you don't know the whole story unless you know the whole story. Yeah.
Now, from, you know, losing streaks, how big they are depends on what your bankroll is. Now, $1,000 losing streak, to me is almost pocket change.
One hand. I mean, oh, $1,000 hour or
$1,000.
Dollars.
But
yeah.
You know, there's a guy with a bankroll of $100 who loses $1,000 on credit on a football game. That's a serious loss. So anyway,
to me, it's more about the length of time, the number of hours, because it starts to wear on you.
It does.
Emotionally, you know.
And you need to go back and recheck to make sure you're playing winning game. However you do that on video poker, you can use software and recheck the figures. It's like, it's possible that you thought a slot club was worth 2%, and then you redid the math and goes, oh, I messed up the decimal point. It's only 0.2%. And so that can be a big difference. Now, that hasn't happened to me, but I know it's happened to other people. I actually go back and I learn the fine points. And so 99.9% accuracy is plenty good enough for most players, not for me. I want it considerably better than that. As far as I'm concerned, being perfect is barely acceptable minimum requirement, and so I strive to do that. So especially when you're on your losing streak, you don't want to be giving up these extra little bits.
You also have to put it in perspective. I mean, for me, if I was looking at money, what I was making or losing, that would be one thing. I was looking at my royal dearth. Why was I not getting royal flushes? Well, you can't do anything wrong not to get royal flushes, except, you know, if I was throwing away every three to the royal or something. Well, I wasn't. A monkey would be getting royal. So it's very much easier to justify when you sit down and think about it and go, well, I've just been very, very unlucky that none of these things are ever coming in.
When I was counting and losing for all those hours, I had friends come out with me three or four different times and had somebody sit at the table with me and watch me play, you know, because I started thinking I must be doing this wrong.
Exactly.
You know? So, yeah, I mean.
Well, I continue to ask a question, you know, do I have it anymore? Like, I'm going to be 67 years old next month. Now, I'm the oldest guy in the room, but the other guys aren't that far behind. So, and I'm 100% certain my memory isn't what it was 30 years ago. But I can't say if it's down 5% or 20% or 40%. I don't know. Now, I'm assuming for at least the next couple decades, I will still have what it takes mentally to do this. I don't know that. I can check myself on the software, but I can continue to evaluate.
Well, if regular people or anything, you know, people who play out there or anything like me, for some reason, even though I know the difference, when I lose at gambling, I feel derelict. I mean, it's ridiculous. For some reason, I feel worse losing at gambling than I do losing money in any sort of business decision or anything else. Even though I know I have an edge, I still feel derelict. So it's got to be tough to take for people who aren't sure, who care about things like that, going, man, what did I just do? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
And it has to do with your family. Now, I was married to Shirley for 17 years, and she, at the end, was beginning to understand that, yes, I could lose $8,000 in a day and still have, when I say I did everything correctly, I was probably telling the truth. But now Shirley's gone, and now trying to have that conversation with Bonnie is a whole new conversation. And so she's getting there, sort of. All right.
New Good subject. Luck with that.
Yeah. James Grosjean. He's a legend among table game players, arguably the best blackjack player ever. James has also worked out mathematical models for a variety of ways to beat other table games. Used copy of his Beyond Counting Exhibit CAA book are being sold for multi-thousands of dollars, if you can find one. Now there's a blog by James Grosjean called Beyond Counting on the Las Vegas Advisor site.
Beyond Numbers, I think it's called.
Right? Yeah, Beyond Numbers.
Beyond Numbers, uh-huh. All right, so Anthony, tell us about that.
Well, everything you say about James Grosjean is, you know, reasonably backed up. The guy's amazing. But he's also sort of an enigma. He doesn't like to talk a lot. He shares information in books that he tries not to sell. It's amazing. You know, I mean,
he's never been on the show.
Yeah. I mean, he really does. He puts it in a book and then he vets everybody. He vets every single person who tries to buy it. And he tries to decide if they're worthy to buy it. And he ends up not selling books to people who want to give him hundreds and maybe thousands of dollars. I've known him for quite a while. I'm honored to know him because the guy doesn't suffer fools. So since he talks to me, I reckon I'm not a fool. And I mean, you know, you kind of start to take your own measure off of things like this. We talked for years about getting together and really putting good, solid gambling information online. And he suggested that we start with a blog. And I said, man, anything, you know, anything to get James Grosjean at LasVegasAdvisor.com.
Yes.
And he started doing it, and we're off to the races, and it's pretty exciting. It's cool stuff.
Yeah, he's only had four, five, six, something like that posts so far.
Three. Only three.
Really?
Unless he just put one up. Only three, last I saw.
No, it's only three. He answers in the comments section. But the actual post, there
have
been three.
The last two, last one, both Munch and I actually saw fit to make a comment on it. So, and there are other people of our ilk who respect James and are in there responding to James's comments.
Yeah.
Which is good.
It will ramp up. He's softballing right now. I mean, right now he's putting up stuff that's really interesting, and you look at it and you read it and go, wow, this is cool. But it's only a very, very small part of what this guy's got lined up to come out.
He's waiting for the casino people to get bored with it so then he can start putting the real information up.
Maybe. All right. Is there anything else at Huntington Press or LVA that you'd like to tell us about, Anthony?
No, nothing going on.
Yeah, right. So why don't you take 5 minutes and tell us about that nothing going on?
we'll do it in less than five. I mean, you know, the big news at LVA, you know, there's two things at LVA we're doing. One is just a really big build out, trying to do more of what we've always done. Better deals for the customers and more gambling information. That's where the Grosjean thing comes in. We just opened something called the LVA Casino. We're sort of beta testing it right now. This is fun. This is a social casino. This is where people come and we hold every day, except weekends, but there will be weekends soon. We hold blackjack, poker, and slot tournaments where we give away real prizes. We give away gift cards to Amazon. We give away Huntington Press books. We give away LVA memberships.
Now, I have to say, I went in yesterday. I'd been meaning to do this for a long time. But so yesterday I went in and I played the blackjack tournament and the poker tournament.
You mean that blackjack tournament that I won?
The one that clearly...
You're winning tournaments on your own site?
You bet I am. And
boy, there's some suspicious stuff going on around
but
here.
But now you say the social aspect, the one I couldn't talk. I typed in the text thing and
you talked plenty. You talked and I answered. What are you talking about? You said how many hands? And I said 15.
Oh no, I'm sorry. In the blackjack. Yeah, in the blackjack I was able to, but in the poker no.
Yeah, the poker is, well, like I said, we're in beta. And poker is one of the things. The arrows don't work on the scroll bar and all that sort of thing. You know, so yeah, it's more of a thing that you just kind of come and do and it's fun. Now there's lots of things we have to fix. Because when you win a tournament, and like I said, I've won several, but when you win a tournament...
When you win Huntington Press books, which ones do you take?
I just put them back in the stock. But I mean, when you win a tournament, there should be firecrackers going off and everything else. Here's what happens. You win a tournament, and it goes, you won. And boom, it's gone. I mean, there's all these things that we're fixing. It's in beta. Right. But it's a fun part of what we're trying to put together there. Of course, the big news. Go ahead.
My one other comment about the poker tournament was you need a button that says, I need to think on this hand. I need
fast.
A little more time on this one.
Yeah,
not all the time.
You took third. I watched. You didn't knock me out, but you crippled me. And then I was knocked out in the poker tournament. And I watched, and you took third, and I applauded. I was like, do not let him come in and win this tournament. Right off the bat. You took third. But yeah, we're fixing it. It's in beta. It's going to be fun. What's really good about it, I mean, I just came from a meeting at the Rampart talking to them about various things. I said, would you guys like to put together a weekend in golf at the Rampart as a prize for one of our free tournaments? They're like, heck yeah. You know, we're going to, when we really release this, it's legal, it's free, and it's a lot of fun. You can win good stuff. The other good info, I mean, what we're doing right now is just the release of the new coupon book. Everyone wants to know what the coupon book is. And, you know, again, we had a great member rewards book this year.
Is this Pocketbook of Values, or does it have a new name?
It used to be called Pocketbook of Values. It's now called Member Rewards, MRB, Member Rewards Book. And it's very, very good.
Why, just out of curiosity, why it changed the name?
I forget. We wanted it. We had some clandestine meeting, and we just decided it was much stronger to call it Member Rewards. Pocketbook of Values, I guess, sounded just a little kind of like flighty and weird. And Member Rewards sounded like what it was.
Now, how many are actual money? Meaning,
About 30. There's about 20. There's about, I think there's 28 gambling coupons. And I brought this in the numbers this year. And you know, everybody wants to play these gambling coupons. They're a mixture of match plays and video poker bonuses and certain table game bonuses like 2-to-1 blackjack at a couple different places. Terribles 2-to-1 blackjack on your first blackjack at Golden Gate. Push on your first 22 at the D. These are all pretty valuable coupons.
Yes.
Worth about 17, 18 bucks a piece. The assessment, the total value of this book is $426. I mean, really, anybody who buys a membership for 37 or 50, depending on whether you want the printed copy, and you play every gambling coupon, the EV is $426. What we call...
Wait, just for the gambling coupons? Mm-hmm. That's not the
Those
buffets?
And, wow. No, if you add it all up, it's honestly over 1,500. It's like ridiculous. It's closer to 2,000. But I don't throw that around because people don't believe it. And they're not going to use all 132 coupons anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not. So what we do is we put together things like what we call AI value, AI standing for any idiot. I mean, these are the ones that you don't have to have a specific knowledge of a game. Just put the coupon down and play it through. The value of that is $175. Essentially, any idiot could play the coupons that are easy, and your EV is $175. And free play alone is right on the number, $50. Yeah, it's $50 for an LVA, and the free play is $50 worth. So it's pretty strong, and that's not counting the shows and the meals and the buffets.
Most of the shows and meals are 2-for-1 or something.
Almost
like that.
All 2-for-1, but we did. I jumped on Station. Station Casinos really gets into our book. They help a lot. And I told them, look, we need 50% for single diners, and they did. They made all their stuff good, 50% for singles. So that's a big improvement this year as well.
Good. All right.
What about books? Any new books coming out?
Yeah. This last year was our least busy year ever for books, and that's probably because my senior editor of many, many years, Deke Castleman, was not involved for the last 2 years. Deke's come back. We've got about 7 big books.
Yes.
On the docket. One of them, by one of your frequent guests, Bob Nersession, is going to do. We're working on his next book on the gambling law, and
yes.
2 or 3 really big poker books.
Good, good, good. All right.
So it was 5 minutes, maybe 5 and a half. Thanks.
All right. If you would let him come in second, we would have given you 7 minutes. All right. Now, anybody want to win $1 billion? All you have to do is create the perfect 64-team March Madness college basketball bracket sheet. Warren Buffett and Quicken Loans are putting up the money. Entries are free, limited to the first 10 million entries submitted. Even if you don't win the billion, the top 20 scores get $100,000 apiece, which isn't too shabby. You're limited to 1 entry per household.
And where do you go to enter?
It's all over the internet. If you look up, put in $1 billion on Google, you'll find it. So entries are actually worth less than 1 cent apiece. And it takes quite a bit of time to fill out a bracket sheet. But still, you could win a billion. Odds are given as 1 in 9 quintillion, which is a lot of zeros after that one. But that assumes a chance for every team to win each particular game is 50-50, and that's simply not true. Still, it's a formidable task. A lot of people think nobody can win it. We'll see. Now, they do have some play-in games before the 64, but this is only listed to the 64, and it assumes whoever wins those play-in games and they play the number one seeds are going to lose. Now, that's always happened in the past. It doesn't have to be that way forever, but this contest assumes that it will. Now, I'm going to ask Anthony first because sports betting is more his thing than Richard. But what do you think about this?
Oh, I think it's, on the part of Buffett, it's a pure advantage play move. You know, I mean, it's pure business. It's, that's what actuaries are all about. They figure out odds and they offer much less than what the true odds are. And that's the situation here. You know, you mentioned 9 quintillion, but I've seen the best estimates that I've seen to be able to do it, picking all the chalk, meaning you're picking the favorites, or even if you have knowledge of, whatever, you're a great handicapper. You really can't calculate it because you can't quantify how good someone can be. So you can't get a precise calculation. But the best I'd seen up to this year was 1 in 150 billion. So he's offering 1 on a 150, 149 to 1 shot or whatever.
Except I saw the entry is free.
Well, yeah.
That would be what you say is right if he was charging $1.
Well, no. But he's now selling insurance to Quicken Loans.
I assume he was paid, right? I assume.
He's selling insurance to Quicken Loans.
But your argument is if the entries cost $1, but they're free. So this is definitely a positive EV thing on the order of less than a penny. But
no, I'm saying from Buffett's, what Munchkin just said, from Buffett's point of view, he's not doing this for free, I don't think, unless he values the PR, which is another thing, and that might be also worth it. But I'm sure that Quicken Loan paid him some amount for the policy, which he's got an edge on. I would be shocked.
Massive edge. Yeah. And it's a good deal for Quicken Loans too, because they have gotten so much publicity about this.
As has he,
but he
Berkshire Hathaway, whatever his thing is.
But he's 85 years old.
Yeah,
he only has $16 billion anyway, so he doesn't need a whole lot of publicity.
But he's been in this business for a long time of selling insurance for big long shots. So
I mean, there are people that do this for a living. One of the books we did, "Man with $100,000 Breasts." About the guy with the boobs. There was a story about a guy who sells insurance to all the casinos and the hole-in-one champion, propositions and everything else. That's what they do. They figure out what the real odds are, and they charge a premium on it, and they get rich.
All right. Bitcoins. Now, it's a virtual currency. It's used in several places, more and more. Each Bitcoin has a variable value, perhaps worth about $1,000 each today, but infinitely fractionizable, meaning that if you wanted to buy a soda that for slightly more than $2.50, you could pay 0.00254-7543 bitcoins if the store would collect it. To learn more about this, Wikipedia has a 10-page write-up on it. Now, they've largely been used in illegal and semi-legal activities, but slowly are becoming more mainstream. Two casinos in Las Vegas are now accepting bitcoins as payment, both the D and the Golden Gate, which are related ownership-wise. Now, these are not major casinos in Vegas, but it's a start. Richard, does your barber accept bitcoins?
No, the governments hate this, right? Because they have no control.
No
over
paper
the
trail.
No paper trail and no control. So it would not surprise me if, the federal government finds a way to just shut this down entirely. I'm not sure how, but I'm sure they're working on it.
Anthony, do you foresee LVA accepting Bitcoin payments relatively soon?
I had not even contemplated that, but yes, I would say yes. I mean, depending on, I think it's viable, and I agree with Munch for sure that the government, if they get it up their craw that they don't want it, they can stop it. You know, everyone says the government, well, the government can't go in and track it down and take your money and whatever, but the government couldn't really stop internet gambling either, could it? You know, I mean, I think they could stop it if they want to now. But I think that if they let it go, it's going to turn into something that they really can't tame.
Right. But they stopped internet gambling not by stopping the gambling, but by going after the banks,
yes.
Right, when they passed the
exactly.
UIGEA. And so they'll find some other way of shutting this down.
Yeah. What I'm saying is that I think that it's going to continue because I think the public is going to want it. And I think that what they did at the D, you know, that's Derek Stevens there. And I think what Derek did was brilliant because he's all over the news, man. He's everywhere right now. There was a thing on USA Today today about, you know, his casinos. And I think that it's something that is probably going to pick up steam, and I would do it. I would accept it. At this point, I would accept it if it was presented to me in an easy way to make the transfers. I would do it.
It'd be great for gamblers if you could gamble with them because – You
which
know.
Is being considered, what I understand, by gaming control.
And certain overseas online sites, you can use it.
I heard today, I mean, the details are not allowed to be told, but I heard today that Bitcoin kiosks are on the way in the casinos, that deals have been made already. All right, so
wow.
at the D right now, all you can do is take Bitcoin, use it at... You can use it for your hotel room. You can use it in the D gift shop. You can use it at Andiamo Steakhouse at the D, and you can use it at American Coney Island at the D. Those are the only places you can use Bitcoins to purchase. But I hear that kiosks are on the horizon where you can, you know, withdraw and take out and put in. And then what's next? I don't know. I heard Gaming Control. Or I read that Gaming Control is considering letting it be used on the floor. I mean, the farther it goes, the harder it's going to be for government to shut it down.
All right, let's go on to something else. In Atlantic City, there was a poker tournament last Friday at the Borgata where 4,800 players put up $560 apiece. When they got down to three tables, 27 players, they halted the play because they had determined that one or more players had introduced a significant number of counterfeit chips into the game. So far, nobody's been paid. There's almost $2.4 million in the prize pool, and right now nobody knows what's going to happen. Now, introducing a substantial amount of counterfeit chips, in addition to being illegal, is not easy to do. Everyone is on camera all the time. If I have $20,000 in chips in front of me, and 20 minutes later I have $100,000 in chips, without winning some pretty big pots in the meantime, somebody else at the table is bound to notice. Good players keep track of other players' chip stacks, either approximately or exactly. The chips had to be identical or close to identical to what was already being used. If the casino had prepared for, say, 6,000 players, there'd be a large number of extra overflow chips that weren't being used in the tournament that would match perfectly. If these were indeed overflow Borgata chips, and I don't know that they were, then there's a chance of some inside help here. Introducing these chips at the right time is critical. Every hour or two, the casino colors up players, removing the lower denom chips and replacing them with higher chips as the antes go up and as the blinds go up. So you can't introduce certain color chips either before or after they're being used at the table. Since it's all on camera, I would suspect the perpetrators will be caught and arrested.
I think you're naive, Bob.
Okay.
This is I think this is one of poker's dirty little secrets is how much cheating has been going on for years and years and years. This is the first instance I've heard of where the chips were actually counterfeit. But I've heard many, many stories of people who in years past, they would take the chips off from a smaller buy-in tournament and then use them later for higher buy-in tournament. There are also situations where people have partnerships where they have people dump all their chips off to one another.
Well, dumping chips wouldn't affect the total amount of chips in play.
No, but I have heard stories of many, many, many poker tournaments where at the end of the tournament they have more chips than the number of buy-ins.
Right, they don't announce it.
Right, no, of course not. I mean, this is, you know, and there was a thing, I don't know, might have been 10 years ago, where some guys came out and basically came forward and said all this cheating is going on. Mm-hmm. And Mike Caro interviewed these guys, and I think the interviews are on YouTube now, 6 hours worth. And man, Mike Caro got death threats, and I mean, it ruined his life. I mean, you know, because the moneyed interests just don't want to talk about this.
Well, there's a very famous book about cheating called American Roulette, written by Richard Marcus. It's a really good book. And Richard did another book that didn't get much play. It was called Dirty Poker. And Richard talked about a lot of things that go on in the poker world. And I didn't read all of Dirty Poker. I don't recall some of the stuff. I don't know if he talked about, you know, bringing in additional chips. But this is something that has been going on for a long time. And I got a feeling that some amateurs probably tried to do something and they got, you know, they got picked off on this one. But yeah, it's been going on.
Think they'll be caught? I'm betting yes, but Richard says I'm naive.
Which both
might be true.
I think counterfeit chips will get caught. Yes, but people bringing extra chips into tournaments, I heard a story down in Aruba where a guy's bag, you know, when they close up for the night and they put everybody's chips in a bag, and the next morning he had more chips in the bag than he had the night before when they put him in. And yeah, you know, so
a lot of, look, anytime there's a lot of money on the line and there's a lot of moving parts, there's a lot of people out there who try to take advantage.
Yeah, and one good time to increase chips is if the table you're playing at is down to five players and they go, you go to table number 7, you go to table number 9, you go to table number 14. So everybody picks up their chips and leaves to the other table. And when you get to the new table, nobody knows how many chips you had at the old table.
Right. Yeah.
So that's I guess that's the time to introduce it.
Yeah.
So should I want to do my life in crime, that's where I'll start.
I'm glad Richard went first, because I was going to go, yeah, maybe. Yeah. Then you went, man, you both are naive.
All right. So now let's let Richard do some talking. There's an Australian tennis player who was signaling up to bookies.
Not a player.
Somebody in Australia on a tennis match signaling to bookies during the match.
Right. Now, and they arrested this guy. He had some kind of a communication device in his pants that he was, you know, sending out signals to. But I don't understand the charge. I mean, what did he... you can sit there and send texts on your phone.
I do.
Well, okay, explain it to me. I can send a text on my phone. Why is that any different?
This, apparently the TV, who had a 7-second delay from the live match. Now...
Right, that's how they were getting their edge.
So there are things. Now, I don't know how you... there's online betting. So now, if, for example, if you can bet, will there be a let ball, which is where the ball on the serve hits the net and then goes into the right place, it's a do-over. If you had that possibility and you had a 7-second edge, that would, you could get a big bet down. Now, of course,
sure, this is how he got his edge. I applaud that.
I looked at this pretty closely. I think that was the implication. They call it court siding, right? What they wanted to imply was that it was past posting. That's what they wanted to imply, that this guy was moving it so fast that he was able to allow his people that he was working with to make a bet after he knew the result, past posting.
Yes.
But all of these, it's really, really big in Europe, and they are far too sophisticated to allow past posting. You cannot bet, to my knowledge, that quickly on the next point. You can bet like 3 points ahead, that sort of thing. There's no past posting possible, really, I don't think, except in really shoddy operations. What they were doing is getting the information out faster for the ones ahead. It was not past posting. It was giving them an edge in the quantification of their next bet and what they wanted to do.
And the guy was a former employee of Betfair,
yeah,
which is one of the biggest places. So, great. I understand that, and I assume they could get a big edge that way.
Yeah.
My question is,
what's illegal
what
about
did
that?
He do about it? Right. What did he do that's illegal? You can't send a text sitting in a tennis match?
I agree with you 100%. I don't think there was any chance there were past posting. What they were doing was getting an edge like a stockbroker who's better than that stockbroker. And so I don't see what the charge is. You're smarter and faster than me. I don't know that that's
this had to be set up, right? They didn't just happen to notice it and bust this guy. They were watching this guy, and they did say that they had done this at several other tennis matches in Australia. So yeah, they committed a lot of police resources to watch this guy send text messages while watching a tennis match. I just think it's ridiculous.
I think this is a better company. This is a company they were. I think they're selling the information. They're or else they're using it themselves, and they just do it better than everyone else. I don't think they're breaking a single rule from what I've seen.
Yeah,
it did remind me of the movie The Sting, where
that's posting
that was yeah. horse racing where they got the information on the. Afterwards, but
actually, when I was a kid, I lived near Arlington Racetrack outside Chicago, and there were no telephones at the racetrack, and they weren't allowed to have telephones at racetracks for exactly that reason. And there were guys that were caught across the street on top of the roof of a building with binoculars mm-hmm. and telescopes, and they would be up there trying to see the results of the races and phone them in and.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant things. I mean, that's what The Sting was about. You know, that book I just mentioned, American Roulette, was about past posting. I mean, that's what it was about.
Good. Right. I haven't read that book. It's
really good.
It'll be on my list. All right.
Oh, we should get Richard Marcus for this show.
Oh, yeah. Richard's good.
Good. If you have a contact information, we want it.
I was on Good Morning America or the Today Show with Richard Marcus.
Right.
And I thought I was going to be, wow, this is going to be great. And once they saw what Marcus could do, they didn't want to talk to me. Somebody said, wow, you are Richard Marcus's biatch. I was like, yeah.
All right. So we actually have bunches of other things. I want to get the commercials out of the way, and then we're going to fill up the rest of the time with the rest of the stuff. But don't go away. We're coming back here. Now, the South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anyone else has. My best guess, Double Point Day in February, will be Friday, February 14th, Valentine's Day, and or Monday, February 17th. So far, no official word. Next semester, free video poker classes at the South Point will begin Wednesday, February 5th. We'll continue weekly for 10 weeks. It's at noon. The current schedule may be found on bobdancer.com. At the Palms, they've completely reformatted the weekend drawings. In January, it's Friday only, 7:30. You can earn a maximum of 100 tickets per day. This has turned it into a low roller event. If you swipe on Friday and don't win, you still will get $10 in free play on your card Saturday between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. Been a lot of complaints about this, and in February, according to the president of the Palms, Todd Greenberg, in February it is going unlimited tickets, and you can earn 2 times drawing tickets on Tuesdays and Thursdays, as many as you want. They have Monday, Wednesday, Friday play, earn, and win for the rest of the month. It is, you can earn up to $208 in free slot play daily. It's at 0.22%, which makes it essentially double points 3 days a week. As always, you keep your points even if you redeem the free play. At videopoker.com, this remains the best place to practice a wide variety of games, including Quick Quads, Ultimate X, Extra Draw Frenzy Poker, Hyper Bonus, and others. Often these games are the best returning games in a casino, and you need to practice so you know how to play. The free monthly contest this month, starting tomorrow, January 24th, is Good Times Pay Poker. Good Times Pay is a triple play variation where you get random multipliers on every hand at exactly the fair price. For example, if you're betting 10 coins, the multipliers average out 2 times, over time. So this adds variance without changing the return or the strategy. One thing to keep in mind, when you're checking out a casino for the best games, check the Good Times Pay poker machines. In some places, they have better pay schedules here than on the regular machines of the same game. There's no change in strategy. If you don't want the extra variance, you can always go. You always can play them 5 coins per line. All right. The NFL, National Football League, is having a Super Bowl in about 10 days. Our guest next week, Michael Shackelford, former host of this program, likes to bet Super Bowl props. So he's going to be here next Thursday night on props. And that show's going to be devoted to that. The props are actually out now. They've been out for 50 minutes as we talk at least one of the casinos here in town. If you're going to bet props, you have to be in Nevada somewhere. It doesn't have to be Vegas, but it's got to be a Nevada casino.
I've heard there are people who can call guys on the phone and make those prop bets.
Well, I'm sure that's true, and there's also we do have a certain international audience, and there's the prop bets are all over the internet, and so if there's possibilities there, but Shaq's gonna be talking a lot about prop bets next week. Now, also in the NFL. They had an interesting economics problem. Every year for the Super Bowl, they hold 1,000 tickets for the average players, and they keep them at the market at the face value of $500, even though the supply equals demand price is about 2,000. So, and the players and the people who win these $5,000 tickets in this lottery. A lot of them have the nerve to sell them for $2,000. Go figure. Mm-hmm. Now, the NFL doesn't want this. They don't want this to be a money grab for players who win the lottery. So apparently they're going to put names on the tickets, and you got to show ID when you use these tickets. What do you think about this?
You know, I used to do what we used to call ticket fishing. Back in the old days, and I ended up with Masters golf tickets one year, which I did sell. It's really hard to control those things. You know, I mean, rock concerts do this too now, where they try to control the price of the tickets and try to cut the scalpers out. But like you said, it's economics. It's supply and demand, you know?
Yeah, it's a competition, you know? I mean, I understand both sides. You know, they have their advantage players too. You know, that these ticket brokers and scalpers, and the casino is the NFL, who owns the game and the tickets, and they decide they don't want it to happen. And I think they have every right to try to stop them.
Think they will?
No.
So we have less than a minute to go.
Somebody buys one of those scalp tickets, they can always call their friendly blackjack player and find out how to get a fake ID in the name of the ticket.
Yeah, hey. That's where we started, right? Yeah.
That's an idea. Hey, good.
A new business model, right?
Oh, good. That's an idea.
Come full circle in this show.
All right, we started with that and we're ending with that. So we're not ready to announce all the details yet, but there's a good chance we're going to be talking to Anthony
Curtis.
Who's
on After Shack?
We'll tell you next week, because right now we're out of time. Thank you, Anthony. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.